play.
Sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kane is in the building, nigga.
Yeah. Alright, already the show goes on all night. Till the morning we dream so long. Anybody ever wonder when they will see the thunder? Just remember when you come up, the show goes on.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the Always Pressing PGA DFS Podcast. This week, we will preview the 2019 Desert Classic, the ever-changing name, the Career Builder, whatever you want to call it, the Desert Classic down in Southern California. You can find the podcast on Twitter at Always Press DFS and at all your listening pleasures, you know, iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, iTunes, YouTube, the works. Go check them out. Give us a rating and review. We much appreciate it. I'm on Twitter at BDendrick and my co-host. As always, you can find him on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods. Jesse, how we doing?
Doing well, man. Here we go. Let's get into some PGA again. Even though this one's a little bit wonkier than the rest, but excited to be here. How are you?
I am good. It is a nice wet Monday evening in California. So, it's just, West Coast swing. Golf finally comes to California and it's going to rain. Probably through Thursday. We'll kind of keep an eye on it, but it's going to be interesting. But yeah, that's how I'm doing. How are you doing?
I'm doing good, dude. we have a saying in Kentucky right now, when it rains, our mud was getting dry. So thankfully it's raining. I mean, dude, it's been bad around here. So I don't even want to hear about your weather in California.
Fair enough. Let's recap some even better weather at the Sony Open over the weekend in Hawaii. Matt Kuchar. He's won two out of the last three events he's played in. Matt Kuchar. Yes, the Matt Kuchar, the guy that we love to play when he's like in the 8Ks and you just want a guy to make the cut. Now he's winning things, Jesse, and he's probably going to be at least 9K, if not in 10Ks, in a lot of tournaments coming up. What's your thoughts on Kuch taking down another one?
Yeah, dude, he was impressive, man. I mean, he's got the putter going at this point. I don't know if he's changed anything or what he's doing differently, but last year was not really a great year for him. 2017. He had a lot of top tens. He was like kind of the backdoor top 10 guy on tour. And yeah, two wins in three events, man. Like, and obviously the one that he didn't win was the Champions Classic Tournament Champions, 2 weeks ago. So, dude, he's playing just out of his mind at this point. And I don't know what else to say about him.
Yeah, one thing that I did like to see is, it's a guy that can wear Skechers. He can talk trash, but do it sneakily. He gives us like all hope as we get older and want to keep playing golf. He gives us hope.
Yeah.
But because when you take that Skechers deal about 2 or 3 years ago, you got to think, I'm cashing out now because I don't think I'm ever going to win again. And then the stories you hear about the way he just the words he makes up to talk trash, it's like worse than Philip Rivers. It sounds pretty amazing. I'd love to play around a golf with Kuchar.
Yeah. Did you see that? Well, they asked him about he got some robot, I guess, for winning the event.
Oh, really?
And yeah, it was like just a total Kuch response on that. But, dude, I don't know, man. And the other thing was, which was odd to me, he was like 23% owned, 23%, 25% owned on DraftKings, and even higher, I think, in cash. And it's just, I totally missed the boat on that. I did not see that coming at all.
Yeah, I had him in two of my four lineups, and I know we were texting yesterday, and it was a great week. You mentioned it during the podcast last week. You tweeted it out. If pricing can stay this way most of the year, it's going to be fun, because it was like the old days where if you made the right plays, I had 2 4-6s, a 5 of 6, and a 6 of 6, and I had all but one of the 4 or 6s got somewhere into the green. And it's because two of them had Kuchar in them. I had a Reavie. It's like it was the old days where you didn't have to have the nuts all over the place to make it work, which is really, really nice. And ownership was spread out pretty well outside of like a couple of the main guys. It was spread out pretty good, and that was thanks to the good pricing, like you mentioned.
Yeah, I agree 100%. Like the pricing last week was what I would consider quote-unquote sharp. So what that means to me is – you don't have your obvious 100% cash gameplay. So it spread the ownership out. I mean, I think the top guy was like 20-25%. Like, I think Kuch may have been up there. I know JT was up there, maybe 30% in some contests, but and then it really went downhill after those main guys, like you just said, which made it a lot of fun to play. And 6 of 6 was initially about 11% after Friday. And then there was the MDF. Woodland got cut out, obviously, because I one and done him. So that's the reason he decided to go ahead and pack it up. And that knocks it down to like right around a little bit below 5%. So my 1.66 was able to actually climb pretty good on Sunday, but it sucked that Piercy and him kind of made a late charge there on Friday to get through the cut, to give those guys one more day to, you know, accrue points. But either way, yeah, I mean, if pricing stays like this, it will be a really fun time to play DraftKings golf, but you know, who knows how they're going to end up, what they'll go back to.
Yeah, they'll be curious. When we get into the preview for the Desert Classic, it's one of the weaker fields we've seen in a, like we're going to see this year because of the new scheduling. It gets pretty busy after this. This is kind of the bye week a lot of guys have for the most part. There's still some good guys here, but it's kind of the bye week. Couple, you know, we can kind of spitball on a couple other things. I did want to give a shout out to Stu Goat Sink, a great finish. Continues to get disrespected in the DraftKings world, but he finished great. But more importantly, Jesse, Jordan Spieth. Yeah. He's not back.
Well, you know, he had a quote before the tournament started, and it was basically, I've not been doing anything. I don't know where my game's at. I'm just here. And that was really odd to me. So I'm not really sure where his head's at, but we talk about it so much on this podcast, especially the mental aspect of golf is just, it can't be underrated. And if a guy has not been working on his game, is not taking it seriously, like, you know, it's going to show, and it showed in Spieth.
Yeah, it's definitely one. When I heard that quote, I know the Slack chat was just popping off again this week, and we saw a lot of winning going on over the weekend. But when we saw that tweet, we started talking about it in there, and it's like, I found it very difficult to tell anybody it was okay. Like, people already know Jesse and I's feelings on playing Jordan Spieth, but when you see a quote like that, I really want to know how people still justify playing that, man. I just couldn't figure it out, because the competitive nature of most people, and maybe Spieth is different, and we'll find out, is I know myself and others, if you're struggling at something, sure, you can take a break away from the competitive, like round-by-round aspect of it, but you're probably practicing your ass off trying to get back to it. And the fact he wasn't really shocked me.
Yeah, that's odd to me too. He had a whole offseason to try to work some stuff out. And, you know, I mean, he got married, you know, I guess that, I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I just don't know where he's at. So he's off limits for me for a while.
Last thing I'll mention is, we talked about it last week also. Guys that played in the Century usually finished really well, like top 20 type finishes at the Sony, and the top three finishers this last weekend all played in the Century. So something to think about again for the following year. There are some correlations that more often than not work out. And course history was a major factor, as well as CH3. Just, he's doing his West Coast thing, people. And you're going to see when we get to pricing, he's priced accordingly this week. So we'll get there in a minute.
And Putnam. I mean, Putnam's playing really well right now. It's, you know, yep. it's impressive to see him. So I'm happy he's playing well.
All right, let's wrap up our Sony recap and head to the 2019 Desert Classic. It's the 60th anniversary. It is the one caveat before Jess gets the history is they play three courses, and I'll get into brief previews there. I'm not going to go super deep. So everybody gets to play three rounds, and after three rounds, it's top 70s and ties. But as we saw this last week, if it goes to an MDF, which is 78 or more tied, it drops down to top 60 get in. So it's not 78 or 80 go to Sunday. If it's an MDF, it goes to 60 for the weekend. So keep that in mind. When you look at your DraftKings lineup, you think, oh, sweet, I made the cut. No, you really didn't.
When you say the weekend, the cut is after Saturday. Yeah, so it would just be for Sunday. Sunday,
yeah. Sunday only. So if they play three rounds, if they're in, it goes to 60 if there's more than 78 tied.
It's really the best way to look at this is a no-cut event.
Pretty much.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, because just getting 6 of 6 is not going to be that crucial, just having one day of it. But it is now newly named the Desert Classic. And apparently it's sponsored by Workday now instead of – so it used to be the Career Builder Challenge. Before that, it was the Humana Challenge. Before that, it was the Bob Hope Classic. And like you said, three different golf courses. And one other important factor on that, I was actually listening to Mayo Show earlier today, and he mentioned that, and I totally forgot about this, there's only shot tracker at one golf course, and that's the stadium course. So go ahead and just tilt my face off with that for the first 3 days. When your guy's not in the stadium course, you will see shot one, shot two, shot three, shot four in the hole. It's tilted. It's awful. So past winners here, last year, John Rahm won this in a playoff over Andrew Landry. It was literally like the David versus Goliath thing. This was the second straight playoff that we had on tour.
Didn't they go like three or four holes?
Yeah, they did. Yeah, they went a few holes, and Rahm was just knocking out like 100 yards by Landry. But Landry was putting well and throwing some darts in there, but he was hitting four irons where Rahm was hitting like 8-9 irons. Year before that, Hudson Swafford, a.k.a. Hudson Swagford, a.k.a. Swag, beat Adam Hadwin by one shot. Duffner was your 2016 champion. Bill Haas, past champion. Patrick Reed, Brian Gay, Vegas has won here. Bill Haas has won a couple times. But the scores will get kind of low, too. There's really only one, like, quote-unquote difficult golf course, and it's not even that difficult. And as the stadium course, it is a Pete Dye design. You'll get into that here in just a second. But most of the time, we're going to get into the 20s here. I think the last time it did not get in the 20s was 2007, was 17 under. So wind is a big factor here, too.
Yeah, and that's been the difference in recent years. You mentioned the three courses. There's the PGA West Stadium course, the Pete Dye course, par 72. They're all par 72s. It goes about 7,300 yards. They got the PGA West course, par 72, 7,200 or so yards. And then La Quinta Country Club, that's like the, hey, let's have fun where all the celebrities are. Par 72, almost 7,100 yards, about 7,060. That is a just birdie machine. There's four par fives that – at one point in time, we're like almost the top four easiest holes in all of golf to play. It's all on the same course. So just keep that in mind for these guys, like Jesse says. And the worst part is, it's like, okay, give me shot tracker. I want to know if my guy's going for eagle or something. Give me something to sweat on. But no, you're just going to find out the hard way.
It's the worst.
Yeah, it reminds me of those Asian events and stuff. But at least this is during the day when I'm supposed to be working, so I can kind of act like I have something else to do. But yeah, I'm not going to go too deep into like the La Quinta and the PGA West. They're super simple. They're all three of these courses are technically less than driver courses. You're going to want accuracy off the tee. There are water aspects to most of the courses. There's a lot of bunkers, especially in La Quinta, that you have to navigate around. But it's really not difficult, like I said. So you can make this work. Bermuda greens, nice and relatively decent speeds. They're not slow, but they're decent speeds. The PGA West Stadium course, though, with Pete Dye. You mentioned it's not as hard as people make it out to be. It was funny when he first built it in 86. He built it a few years after the stadium, like Sawgrass Stadium course, that we see the PGA at all the time in Florida. And there's a lot of similarities. The 17th hole is Alcatraz. It is an island green. There's a bunch of other holes out there with tons of bunkers, tons of water in play. It can be tricky. They said they are some of the deepest bunkers on tour, like that go as deep as 13 feet. So if you get in a bunker, it is penal. Like, it is bad, especially the fairway bunkers. You're not just going to, you know, grab a freaking wood or a long iron and get out of it to the green, most likely. You're going to be in trouble. And then around the green, it's difficult as well. Ask Patrick Cantlay. He probably sells horror stories from the greenside bunkers. So it's not like it's a very, very difficult course, but it does have aspects to it. You mentioned wind can be an issue. Last year, that Thursday was a windy day, and I saw a quote today, only two players in the top 20 last year at this tournament, they started their tournaments at the stadium course. In round one, the stadium course averaged about minus 1.1 strokes, where the other two courses, La Quinta minus 3.5 and the Nicholas course minus 3.3. So there is a drastic difference in the scoring between these courses, especially if there's any kind of weather or some issue in the way of it. So keep an eye on that when tee times come out. We can definitely talk about that in the Slack chat when we have more info there. But you're going to want to keep an eye, because I already mentioned earlier, there's rain, good amounts of rain forecasted all the way through most of Thursday. I think it'll be kind of spotty enough where they can probably still play on Thursday. But keep an eye on that, because that could really make things interesting. If you got to split days on different courses and stuff, it's going to be something to keep an eye on that we don't see every week, but might actually be an impact.
Yeah, it's also important for like showdown slates. So if you're playing round one, round two, round three, round four, showdown slates, which we got some degens in the Slack chat, which I love. You got to stay on top of that in the forecast. And so there's a lot of moving parts this week with that. So it's important to definitely keep an eye on it.
Yeah. And again, I haven't seen the tee times yet, but from what I remember in the past here, and I remember like at Pebble, all the big dogs will be on the same course at the same time. So it'll make it a lot easier to keep track of. So most of your lineups, unless you're punting with certain stuff, will probably be on the same course, I'm guessing. The chalkier guys will be on the same course. With that being said, Jesse, what kind of stats are you looking for? Or are you paying attention to this week?
Yeah, it's tough because you got three different golf courses, right? The scoring is there though, so birdie or better, I think, has to be in there. Greens and regulation goes along with that, in my opinion. I don't think driving distance plays a whole lot of factor, but you know, those are pretty much kind of what I'm looking at for the most part. The other issue is, you know, again, I've talked about the last few weeks, we don't have a lot of recent formed stats, so it's difficult to gauge that. You know, you can look at, for me, those two stats will be my main two stats I'm looking at this week.
I dig it. Yeah, it's pretty much like a driving accuracy situation, birdie or better, a lot of around the green. Like I said, if you miss, you got some bunkers to mess with. You're going to have to get up and down. You have to show some skills there because there's a lot of these holes you need to birdie. Like we both kind of said how the scoring goes here. So if you find yourself in trouble and you're bogeying it, not just parring it, you're going to be losing strokes to the field pretty well. So something to keep in mind there. Not necessarily bomber's paradise, but bombers can, you know, go from a driver to a three wood and still be darn accurate and be just fine. So keep that all in mind. All right, let's get into the DraftKings scoring this week. It's going to be a fun one. The pricing is very interesting, but very fair. 10K and above, we got five guys. John Rahm, the defending champion, at 11.6. Justin Rose at 11,000. Cantlay at 10.6. Chucky Three Sticks up to 10.3. And Adam Hadwin, $10,000. Who are you looking at up here, Jesse?
Yeah, the Hadwin thing, I guess it's course history. He's finished third and second the last 2 years here, and then he has a sixth in 2016. So he's obviously played pretty well at this particular track, but like his recent form coming in is, I don't know, it leaves something to be desired for me. So I'm not really sure that I will play him at all. We're obviously Rahm's defending champion. Cantlay played really well last year here. He didn't play last year. Excuse me. I was thinking he was here, but he was not. Chucky Three Sticks. I'll leave that one up to you. So for me, I really like Rose. The issue with Rose is he hasn't played since, let's see here, when was the last time he played? November. But I do think that I would take him overall because I'd save the $500, and he is, I mean, arguably they're pretty, obviously very good golfers, both of them. But
let me ask you a question real quick. What's your thoughts? Because it's been talked about a lot, and I usually don't care enough about it because I figure they've practiced long enough and they figured it out. But what's your thoughts on these guys changing clubs? Because everyone's talking about Rose and his new Asian clubs. Yeah.
Rose doesn't bother me. I don't think that Justin Rose would make a switch and then, A, not be ready, but also, B, not make a good switch. Because, you know, literally he could play with any golf club in the world that he wants to. So he's changed, and I'm sure he's gotten the practice in to get his numbers down. I don't think that'll be an issue at all. And, I mean, for me, it's $600 difference. I was thinking he was 11,001. He's 11,000 even. Rahm's 11,006. For me, it's Rose up here. I'm not 100% sure that I'll be up here too awful much. But if I am, it would be Rose. I think Rahm will carry a lot of ownership. Cantlay will be right there with him. I'll let you talk about Chucky. Hadwin, just it's weird to me. And maybe he'll come out in top five again, but at 10,000, I'll bet against it.
Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, and I just had to ask the Rose thing because everyone else is asking about it. I know it'll come up somewhere along the line. So it doesn't bug me. I think these guys, they're not just grabbing them the day before and playing with them. They've used these enough. And I agree. Rahm's a really good play. No hate at all. Rose is a good play. I'm looking probably more balanced. We kind of talked before the show about it. But if I am going up here, I don't mind Cantlay at 10-6. I think he'll be the most popular one up here. But he's coming in an outstanding form, a T5, a second, a T7, his last three events. He has not played here in a while, as you mentioned, so something to think about there. But the guy I really, really like up here is Chucky Three Sticks. Coming off a T8 last week, T14 and a first in his last three events. We are on the West Coast where he dominates. He's made 11 of 13 cuts at this event. So again, we're starting to talk course history. There are some guys with some great course history. He's made at least five straight cuts here at T20, T12, T11. We're going to want a little better than that for $10,300. But Chucky 3-6 form, I don't remember ever being this good in a long, long time. So I'll ride that wave with Chucky at 10-3. I think he's a really good cash game play. If you are using a guy up top for cash, I don't think you need to. I can stay down low for cash, but I like Chucky 3-6 up here in the cash world. The Hadwin call is very interesting. You know, four straight cuts made, but nothing sexy. But his course history here is 4-4 cuts, a T3, a second, a T6 in his last three events here. He loves this course. He shot that, what, 59 here? There's something about Hadwin and this course. It's going to get a lot of talk this week. I'm guessing the course history is what bumped him up to $10,000 because, like I said, he's made four straight cuts, but he's a couple top tens and nothing else. And at that price tag, you need like a top five probably. So yeah, it's really interesting with him. Like if Hadwin was like 92 or 88 like he's been, he'd be probably 25% plus owned. At 10,000, now he becomes, you know, when we talk GPP darts, yeah, maybe you roll some dice. If you want to play the course history game, it's a very large, odd-shaped dice to roll.
Yeah, but he's definitely the pivot up there. If you're like, if you're trying to find the low-owned guy, it's got to be Hadwin.
Yeah, definitely. It's way out of his range, but he can do it. We've seen it. It's just, it's odd. That's right. For me, it's Cantlay and CH3. If I'm coming up here, probably CH3 is my main guy. Just for the savings alone, all these guys are going to be great in a field of this magnitude, as we already kind of said.
Yep.
All right, $9,000 range. You got Putnam with the price bump up to 97. Got Phil Mickelson at 95, Aaron Wise at 94, Answer at 93. Chez Reavy just continues to stroke it at 92. Piercy at 91 and List at 9,000. There's a lot to like here, and it kind of makes me feel better about not maybe going up to 10,000. What do you like here, Jesse?
Yeah, I mean, my favorite play down here is Answer. The course history is not great. 76th last year, which basically is last of the guys who make the cut, and he missed the cut in 2016. But he played okay last week. He finished 29th. Nothing too awful stellar, but if you look at kind of his long-term stats, he ranks pretty highly in this field. So I do like Answer quite a bit at 93. It's hard to not go back to Putnam at 97. I mean, the dude, he's like just playing out of his mind at this point. Like, I never expected to still be talking about Andrew Putnam, you know, 6-8 months after we first started talking about him. And then it was like complete speculation. Now he's just playing really well. Second, 14th, fourth in his last three events. And he's played well here too, at least the one time he played here, which was last year, finished 17th. So I like Putnam. I hope people kind of see that price tag and back off. But I do like him. I think Wise is okay for like a GPP. Chez is, in my opinion, an okay place to start your cash game if you're playing cash this week. But Chez is kind of similar to Charles Howell. It seems like he kind of starts coming back around this time of year. You know, obviously he was competing last year in the waste management, and he's done okay here, 36th, 12th, 17th the last 3 years. So it's three made cuts, and he's obviously just he's playing out of his mind. Those would be the three for me in this area.
Yeah, I agree with most of those guys there. Aaron Wise is a good guy I'd look at as well. T17 here last year, he's made both cuts and both appearances. And, you know, T27 last time out, but then T10, T15, T15, T16, playing really, really good, consistent golf at $9,400. I like that quite a bit. I do completely agree with your Answer call. When it comes to ball striking, one of the best on tour. He really just turned it on last year, got it going. Won that Euro Tour event a couple of starts ago. There's a lot to like there with Answer at 94 as well, or 93. But Reavy's my guy up here. I'm afraid how chalky he's going to be. I'm going to keep an eye on that somehow, some way. But I think cash game, you could start with Reavy and feel pretty confident about that. He's made three straight cuts here, a T36, a T12, and a T17. We saw what he's done the last two last week at T3. So I really, really like what Reavy's doing here at $9,200. And then, you know, GPP-wise, I'm not saying cash game because you saw how close it was for him making the cut. But Scott Piercy, man, T6 here last year. He's made 4-7 cuts here. He kind of had an okay weekend to finish T33 last week. Prior to that, T19, T6, T10, T5, he's a birdie-making machine. And then, you know, the Quinta course and that Nicklaus course, a guy like Piercy can go to town on that. As long as he doesn't just, like, you know, find the water, find some bunkers. If he can keep it within, you know, wedge range, Scott Piercy can be really interesting at $9,100. Could be a GPP play for sure. Not so much a cash game play, but GPP, I don't hate Piercy. just because that birdie ability is scary. His putter's scary as well, but the birdie ability is very, very nice. But if I got to pick just a couple up here, I start with Reavy, and then I probably go Wise on Answers, kind of, you know, 50-50 on those. I like those quite a bit, echoing what you said on Answer as well. $8,000 range is getting juicier. You got Kisner, Harmon, Kazire, who just keeps playing really well. Lucas Glover, J.J. Spahn, C.T. Pan. Your boy Swofford, you picked him last week when he was a lot cheaper. Very, very good performance there. Palmer, our boy Sungjae Im, only $8,100 on Bo Hostler. What do you like here, Jesse?
Yeah, I definitely like Im. I think he played better last week. You know, he didn't have any course history over there, so he went over there and finished 16th in Hawaii after kind of a slow start. Shot 71 the first day, but then backed it up with a 64, 65, 68. So I think he figured something out there. Hit a bunch of greens. Putter was average. So I do like Sungjae, especially for GPPs. Swofford, I think he's okay. I think he'll be decently popular this week. He did play very well last week. He finished what, top three? Yeah, third. He finished in top for third with Leishman. He was making a lot of birdies. So it's hard for me to trust Swofford in any cash, but I mean, in a GPP, I could see why you would fade him. He's volatile. Let's just put it that way. I like him, but he's volatile. CT Pan is another interesting guy at 8,400. And then Lucas Glover also at 8,600. 29th year last year, 41st year before, and 16 he was 17th. And the stats are there for him. He is ninth shots gained total in this field over the last 50 rounds. So playing pretty well. 8,600. I don't mind him at all, especially like in a cash game. And you know, he's had a little bit of a layoff, so kind of scary, but.
Yeah, they're not about it. I like Sungjae quite a bit. $8,100 for Sungjae. He's one of the top tee to green guys last week. He's gone T10 and T15 in his last two tournaments. There's a lot to like there about Sungjae. We talk about it pretty much every week. I think at $8,100, where some other guys are priced this week, I think, and could probably switch with some of those guys. I think he's in a great spot here. Now, you know, he's new to this course, and we're going to say it a lot this year. There's going to be certain weeks where he's just not going to have it. It's not going to surprise you because he still is super young, super new to all this. But when he's on, when he's comfortable, he's going to be one of the best ball strikers out there. And $8,100, I like Sungjae quite a bit this week. Another guy I do like is Patton Kizire. As much as we used to clown on the guy, he's come back on the West Coast and done his thing. T10 and a T15 the last 2 weeks. Or no, T17, a T8 in his last 2 weeks. He got a T15 the week before. He's 3 for 3 on made cuts here. There's a lot to like at $8,700. It's hard to fade him yet again at that price tag. He's playing really well. You mentioned Lucas Glover. I think that's a sneaky nice play there at $8,600. When you talk course history, man, 9 of 10 made cuts here, including 4 in a row, T29, T41, T17, and T15. Coming in pretty good form. So Lucas at 86, if you like the course history narrative, very, very good stuff there. CT Pan as well at $8,400. Don't hate it. He's 0 for 2 on made cuts here, but another good ball striker, accuracy type guy off the tee, more of a GPP than a cash game play. So I like him a lot. I like Kazire a lot in this range, these two. And then I like the Glover call. A little more GPP than cash for me, but I think Glover does bring a little bit of the table here that can be quite, quite interesting. All right, we're going to split the 7K up because this is a massive one. Those that listened to us in the past, about half the field's usually down here. So let's start 7,500 and above, Jesse. Give me something you like here.
Yeah, I mean, my favorite play, I think he's underpriced, is Joaquin Niemann.
Yes,
I don't think I'll be the only person on that. So
let's just say now, where do you think his ownership's going to be?
I'd say in the 30s, right? Yeah, I don't know if you'll get that high. I think in a GPP, he'll be 20 to 25%. I could see him getting above 30 in a 50-50 double up situation. Yeah. The stats are just too good for the price here. He's sixth in over the last 50 rounds in shots gained total, and second in tee to green, first in ball striking, shots gained ball striking. So first in off the tee, first in approach. I mean, he's too good over the long term. Now, with that being said, he's never played here. So, you know, if you want to fade for that reason, I understand. Doesn't have the finishes most recently. He hasn't played since November. So, but I mean, I'm willing to take a chance with it, and he'll probably be on a lot of my teams this week, you know, GPP and or cash, whichever I play. Other than that, Fratelli at 7,500, never played here. Interesting, though, he did make the cut last week at the Sony, finished 51st, hit a bunch of greens, just the putter wasn't there, so maybe he can get it going. I think he'll be decently low-owned. Corey Connors, another guy. He played really well, especially on the weekend.
I was so pissed when he got the late exemption because I love playing cheap Corey Connors. Yeah. I really did. That was a bummer.
He played last week, didn't he? I don't have the stats.
Yeah, no, he filled in because someone dropped out. I think it was maybe when Murray left or whatever.
He got in.
So it was after DraftKings. That's why I was like, shit, because I love playing cheap Corey Connors.
Fantasy Labs doesn't have his stats up from last week and his finish or whatever there, but he played well, and especially on the weekends, made a bunch of birdies. And
he finished T3, if that's what I have in Fred Campy, right? Yeah, no, he did. He finished T3. That is what he finished. I remember that now.
So he finished it. I got you. Well, Corey Connors, I don't think, again, that we will be the only ones on him. So another potential GPP fade there, but hitting a ton of greens recently, smashing the ball, hitting a lot of fairways, and the putter's been there. So, him and Joaquin Neiman would be my two favorite here. Fratelli would be kind of the third. You got any love for Berger this week?
I don't know where he's at right now. That's the problem. Like, I'm looking back at we always talk about it. There's really no Pat, like, that recent form's kind of off. But he's been quiet, and he's only played this tournament once, and he missed the cut. Like, he doesn't play here often. When he's playing well, we play him a lot in the Midwest and in Florida. I just don't feel him this week.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think he'll be probably – I'd say he'll be decently chalky, too. When I say decently chalky, I'm talking like 15% to 20% is because of his name, and that's a decently low price on him.
Yeah, I feel you. I echo everything on Neiman. $7,600, that's too cheap for this guy. Even if he misses the cut, I don't care. Like, this guy's way too good. I'll be mentioning him later on in the podcast and other topics we're talking about, but Neiman at 76, I completely agree with. Corey Connors at 75, I've already echoed it when you talked that I love that price tag on him. I think that's phenomenal. And I like Fratelli as well. You mentioned coming in looking really, really good. He's made two straight cuts, T15 or T51, T12. He's just a really good, he missed a cut part of that, but then T5 and T7. He played really well in the fall swing, and he's a birdie guy. He hits greens, and he putts well most of the time. So a guy like Fratelli, I can get behind. And then a couple other here, another kind of web guy, Warinsky. I always mess that up. He's played here twice, T29, T9. He's made at least five straight cuts on tour, his last two, T15, T3. That's a guy I like as well in the $7,600 range. And then a couple guys I just want to ask you about here. We can kind of spitball it. Danny Willett at $7,800 is going to be a popular name. Any thoughts there?
Why is he over here? What's he doing?
That's what I'm confused about. I'm wondering if he's trying to get more events over here is my only guess.
Yeah, I would pass on him.
Okay. One I do like this week because it burned so many people last week, including one of my cash lineups, Zach Johnson at $7,700. Anytime I can get a guy at that price that, yes, he tilted last week. He's also a guy at $7,700 that would not shock me if he's T5-ing or winning this tournament. I can literally see him winning this tournament if his game's on. His game's been a mess. Missed cut T7, missed cut T33, missed cut. But he T20 here last time, three straight missed cuts. Then he made four cuts prior to that, including two top tens. So any love for ZJ at 77?
I rarely have any love for ZJ. I mean, he's like the guy who's always chalky, who bites me.
Okay. And then two other guys we can quick hit on in this 7,500, because I don't want to talk about everybody. But just, we're talking about a less-than-driver-type course. Brendan Steele at 76 usually rings a bell.
Yeah, I could see that.
And then the last guy, remember
course him. Course history, too.
Yeah, remember – let me talk to Steele real quick. I got him right here. Steele, yeah, he's made six of eight cuts here, four straight, including a T6 and a T2. But the other guy I was going to mention is $7,600. He was a lot more expensive at times last year. It's Chesson Hadley. Any thoughts there?
Yeah, I'd pass on Hadley. One more guy, Peter Uihlein. I know we've spent a shit ton of time on on this range.
There's a lot down here that's actually growing.
There is. There's a lot of good GPP plays in this area. I like Uihlein for some GPP action there. He finished 17th here last year, and he's a guy who has the ability to play well and finish highly in some PGA Tour events. So Ulon's a guy to keep your eye on if you don't play him this week, but I'll probably play him too.
And then I got a lot of guys down here, so I'm not going to go deep on all of them. But, you know, for GPPs, like we said, below 75, you got a defending champion, Jason Duffner, who can get hot once in a while. But Bud Cauley is a sneaky one at 74. He's made 5 and 6 cuts here, including his last 3, T14, T3, and T14. So you want to talk about a guy that likes a golf course at 74. You got that. You got Bill Haas, who's won it twice. He's 12 and 14 made cuts here. Not sure it's quite the same Bill Haas as we saw before, but we're talking course history. You know, guys loved some of those old timers last week. Here's another one at Bill Haas at 74. Harold Varner III was crushing it towards the end of last season. Everybody loved him. He's made 4 straight cuts. He's 0 for 3 on cuts made here, though. Keep that in mind. If his form seems a lot different than it has in years past, he's only 7,400. Is another guy to keep an eye on. People that have listened to this podcast long enough know my love for Brian Gay. He at $7,300 is just too cheap. He was putting great again last week, contended for the most part last week. When you look at his overall numbers, he's made 10 of 16 cuts here, including 2 top 10s, and he's been a cut machine, 6 of 6 cuts on tour so far this season. A couple others, mainly just course history type plays here. Harris English at 7,200 made 10 of 16 cuts here. Or no, that's Gay. English, 5 of 5 cuts here, including a T11 last year. He's a tilting guy. It's a GPP only there, but he could be interesting. Nick Watney at only 72 is another guy you could look at. 6 of 8 made cuts here, including a T50. Made 4 straight cuts on tour. I think one guy that's pretty darn cheap that I like a lot is Ryan Armour. He missed a cut here last year, T66 the year before. But talk about a guy coming in great form. T22 last week, T15, T21. So he's kicked off Hawaii with T22, T15. Coming over here at $7,100, I like quite a bit. And the last guy, I hope I didn't take everybody, Jesse, but Rory Sabatini. He got me a T33 last week at sub 7. He's like 8 of 11 cuts here, including a 4 out of the last 5. He's definitely the guy at 7K I don't hate at all, but there's a lot down here. Sorry, what do you like?
There is, man. No, this is it's good pricing again, so it's fun to play. Varner, I think it's scary to play anybody who's never made a cut at a golf course. But he's in in this field, he is 3rd in strokes gained total over the last 50 rounds, 9th tee to green, and the 10th in DraftKings points. So I like him quite a bit, 16th at the Australian PGA Championship, 6th in Mayakoba. So he's been playing, 15th at the Shriners. He missed the cut at the Sanderson. I don't know how, probably because I was probably super heavy on him. But either way, he's played really, really well. I mean, he's basically got top 15s in 4 of his last 5 starts with that one missed cut. Now, the issue, obviously, is he's never made the cut here. I'd like what you said, though, about him being in different form. I think he's a different guy, he's a hope, because I'm probably going to be super heavy on him. I like Harold Varner quite a bit this week. A few more. I don't know what happened to Landry last week. I guess it was because he was on a couple of my teams and they needed him to not play terribly and make a triple bogey on Friday, but he did that and missed the cut last week. But before that, 22nd at the Tournament of Champions, which obviously is like the back third of the field, not super relevant, but he's made a bunch of cuts prior to Mayakoba. He's a deep GPP play. I wouldn't put him on a whole bunch of teams, but he did finish 2nd here last year. So, there's potential that it's the whole Hadwin deal. Now, he did miss the cut the year before that. So, Landry's super volatile, but he should be less than 1% owned. A few more. Kokrak at 7,100, another volatile guy. I mean, he might be first round leader and miss the cut. And then I do like Sabatini as well. So, those would be kind of a few here in this range that I'll be on. Another guy who I'm trying to figure out where this guy's coming from, but he's kind of high up in the model here, is George Cunningham. I got one start for him in the last year and a half, and it was at the PGA, the Canadian PGA, and he finished 29th, and I guess that's where I'll just pull all the stats from that, where he played decently well, but I don't know how much I would actually – put in that, but 7,100 at that.
Yeah, I was wondering about him.
It's an odd price to me.
I was wondering about him too, because he does stat out very, very good, but there's really no recent activity that I've noticed at all.
Yeah, I don't know. I want to look into him a little bit more and figure out what his deal is, but I mean, I've got nothing since 2016. I'm just keep going back here. 15, we got anything? Nothing.
I got nothing.
Yeah. I got one start for him, and that was the Canadian Open.
Wow.
And he finished 29th. So,
maybe he's a drifter that just plays good golf when he shows up. I have no idea.
One more is Sam Ryder. I like Sam Ryder. He's going to be chalky, I would think. He did miss the cut last
price week, point, which is
odd. But at 7,100, I'll take some chances with Sam Ryder.
Yeah, he's better than 7,100. That's for damn sure. Yeah. Let's get in the 6K range where, we already mentioned a lot of GPP plays in 7. Well, you want some more? We got the 6K range. Even dicier than those last ones. Give me something you like down here, Jesse.
A few, Cameron Davis would be one if you're down here in this range. Adam Shank, he could be another. John Catlin, he's rating high in my model. I'm not 100% sure what's going on here with that, but he's okay. Benjamin Silverman's another guy, he's up and down, so I don't know how much I would play him. Wee Kim is interesting, I think, at that price. He did finish 17th here in 2017, and he's missed cuts in 18 and 16. Missed the cut at the Sony Open, but did finish 10th in Mayakoba. Another volatile guy, and I guess that's why we're down here in this range talking about him, is for that very reason. $6,600 for him. Other than that, Carlos Ortiz may be another guy. Missed the cut here in 2016. Finished 29th last week. That's about all I got, man.
All right. Roberto Castro, $6,900, made 5 of 5 cuts at this event, and he's made over 5 straight on tour, so I'll take that in this price range. Just get me through to the Sunday, I guess, here. For Castro, he's one I would look at. Brandon Harkins, P8 here last year. He's a guy that played well on the West Coast last season. Robert Garrigus is another guy that can sneak in. He's made 8 of 10 cuts here. He's definitely GPP relevant. Don't go anywhere near cash games with him, but we've seen him go really low at times on tour. So keep an eye on Garrigus at 68. Scott Brown's playing really well at 68 too. There's a couple guys that you wouldn't be shocked if they're low 7s or 8s, but I'd stay up top there if you had to. Another guy is Bozzelli. He's playing really well. He's missed cut, and he's finished 5th here in the last 2 years. And he's made 4 straight cuts on tour. He's kind of faltered over the weekend on Sunday, but even T33 last week. And so Bozzelli at 64. And the last guy I'll mention, I mentioned him a few times in the fall swing, $6,100, Mr. Rodriguez. $6,100, he can make a lot of birdies on the web. There's some great stories about him. And he's like a mid to late 30s guy from Mexico that finally made it through the web. And he can make a lot of birdies, played well at Sony. So keep an eye on him at $6,100. For $6,100, if he just gets you, heck, for even just 3 days, if he doesn't play Sunday, that opens up your lineup. Just keep that in mind. I'm not saying he's a must play anywhere, but just if you're trying to justify it like I just did, there you go. But I think more often than not, I'm going to stay out of the 6Ks, try to build a more balanced approach that will lead off the 10Ks. But if you want to get up there to the 10Ks, there are options down here, just not great ones. All right, that wraps up the DraftKings pricing, Jesse. Let's do a little bit of our GPP and cash game plays. Give me 3 boom or bust GPP plays. I know we mentioned a ton, so here's only 3. If you have more questions, everybody, hit us up in the Slack chat. We'll answer questions all day, every day, till lock and even after, even though they won't matter. So let us know. What do you got, Jesse?
I mean, number one for me would be Harold Varner. The course history is the issue, but the recent play I love. Another would be Anders Albertsen. And then last but not least for the boom or bust play, are we sticking in the 7s here, or are we going pretty much anywhere we want to?
Anywhere you want.
Yeah, answer would be my other guy.
All right, for me, it's 3 guys that like Pete Dye courses. So if they show up for their Pete Dye, they're good, but they can be tilting as all hell. Give me Luke List, Kevin Kisner, and Brian Harman. Those 3 guys could all win this tournament, or they could all miss the cut like they did recently. But they do play really well at Pete Dye courses, so keep them in mind.
Tilt my face off with Harman, man.
Yeah, that was surprising to say the least. I was shocked by that.
He's got such good course history, though. Like it's ridiculous. And I guess that's why his price is where it's at 8,800. It's 20th, 3rd, and 11th in the last 3 years here. But his strokes gain stats are awful.
Yeah, really. really bad stuff here. And if you look at guys like Luke List, he's made 3 or 4 cuts here as well. And you got Kiz, who loves his. Pete Dye's made 4 or 6 cuts here. So they've gotten through. It's never gotten the big one for you. So GPP, boom or bust. Give me top 3 cash games, or just 3 cash game plays you're looking at.
Neiman is definitely on the list, 100%, in my cash lineup. And then also, let's see here. Other than him, you know, I don't know that I'll play a whole lot of cash this week. But if I did, I would probably look at Glover as well. And then also, it would be hard. But like, I don't know how. Like, I'd love to fit Justin Rose in there.
Yeah, if for me, it's going to be Reavy, Neiman, and Chucky Three Sticks. It'd be the 3 I'd be looking to fit in there for sure. But if you can get up to a Rose or a Rom, that's more than ideal.
Yeah.
Who is your top bust of the week? I have a gut feeling we're going to have the same one.
For me, like this week, it's got to be Hadwin. I don't know. Like at 10,000, I hate saying that because it's like he's, I don't know.
Yeah, no, I see your point there. I'm going Phil Mickelson.
He was my second choice.
I figure that's where you're going. But I'm going to go Phil Mickelson at $9,500. You guys can play that all you want. I don't want to touch that. All right, let's get to our picks to win. Again, go to mybookie.ag, promo code BENCH to get you a 50% deposit bonus. Not 50% add, a deposit bonus on your first deposit. Let's go to mybookie.ag, promo code BENCH. Jesse, who do you like to win it this week?
What we got on answer? What's the price on answer?
40-1.
Yeah, I would bet that. And then what's on Varner?
Harold Varner III. By the way, I had my pick two. I had answer at 40-1 as well. And we don't talk about this before the podcast, everybody. So keep that in mind. Varner is 70-1.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan of that price, but might take a little bit on him. So answer is my guy. I think that price is a little bit long on him, actually.
The other one I have. Field. Well, yeah, because you look at answer's price point at 40-1. The other guy's at 40-1. You have a couple. You have Chez Reavy, Phil Mickelson, Kazire's 45, Piercy's 45, List is 45, Glover's even 40, a ton at 45.
Yeah. I guess it makes sense. He's never won either, so.
But my second one is 60-1, and his name is one Joaquin Neiman. At 60-1, I think that's pretty solid.
I could deal with that as well. Yeah.
And for those that like to play, and you'll hear it a lot, and there's a lot of justification to it more often than not. If you look at prices like this and compare them to DraftKings prices, Joaquin Neiman is $7,600. He's priced like that on the books as well. So either we're missing something or they're all missing something, Jesse. I'm hoping they're missing something. But
yeah,
in theory, it correlates for those that believe in the correlation is what I was trying to say.
He's going to be 25% and miss the cut.
Yeah, it's going to be exciting. I can already
see it. But at least you get 3 rounds out of him. To tilt him missing the cut.
And that's the thing. It's like, okay, go crush La Quinta. Go crush the Nicholas. If you miss the cut, miss it at the Pete Dye course, and we'll just call it a day.
Well, you know, the issue with cash games this week is it's kind of like a no-cut event. I hate playing cash in no-cut events, so I don't think I'll play much at all. But, you know, teach their own.
Yeah, I'm going to see how the builds look. I'm still kind of tempted to just because I think you can get some pretty confident 6 of 6s, even though it's a three-day cut type deal. But I agree with everything you're saying. When you play like that, you need to have the nuts, basically, because as people saw from the MDF this last week to the finals, it really didn't fluctuate as much as you'd like, type thing. As you'd imagine. So something to keep in mind there as well. All right, that'll wrap us up for the Desert Classic preview. Jesse, any final thoughts on this weekend's action?
I don't have much, but I am glad that we're going to have a little bit of early start time and a little bit of an early finish time. This whole Hawaii thing, it's hard to get used to. You can't ever really get used to it. It's only 2 weeks. So now we're kind of back to the West Coast. We'll get some decent start times here. We're not going to be starting at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So,
yeah, I enjoy the later days. I like the California ones better than Hawaii as well, but I like being able to wake up in the morning and not having the lock already. That always gets frustrating because you wake up to the Slack chat or something saying someone withdrew. That's always fun. Yeah. But other than that, it's all good. It'll be a lot of fun. California, Phoenix, all that good stuff the next few weeks. I love the West Coast swing, so it'll be a lot of fun golf. Everybody, go check out Jesse on Twitter at DFS Golf Gods, the podcast at Always Press DFS. I am at BD Intric. And again, if you give us a rating and review on iTunes or wherever you listen to the show, it'd be much, much appreciated. This was the Always Pressing PGA DFS preview of the 2019 Desert Classic. Catch you guys next week. The show goes on all night till the morning.